Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today on the Garden Talk, we're going to be talking about getting your garden ready for the season and taking a look at some lawn alternatives. Our guest, Jeff Epping. Jeff is Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. So, do you need help with a landscape project? Do you have need for plants, suggestions for plants? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Jeff Epping, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
You betcha. Thanks for having me, Larry. It's always fun.
Well, just before we start talking about gardening, how has the COVID-19 affected life at Olbrich Gardens?
Well, not surprisingly, we are closed to the public because, you know, of course, we want to keep everybody safe. So that's been a little strange. Our staff is able to keep working out in the gardens because it's probably the safest environment for us to do so. So we're keeping our distance from each other, but plugging along, keeping the plants, you know, healthy. What's very strange for us is that we don't have volunteers helping us out. Every single day and every part of our operation, we have help. We put in over 30,000 hours a year with volunteer hours. So that's been strange, and we really miss having them around. Not only the work they do, of course, but just their smiling faces and all. So it's a little strange. All of our classes are canceled through the month of April at this point. As well, our plant sale sadly is not going to occur this year. Plant sale with the pros, which was started back in 1969, so that's going to be a huge we'll miss that, but we're going to try to offer somewhat of a sale because we're growing plants for it, and we'd like to be able to offer those up for sale to the community if we can. We're still figuring that out, so stay tuned for that. So yeah, like, things have changed like everywhere, I guess, right?
Right. I'm a member at Olbrich Gardens, and I got your email, and I see you have the spring flower show video tour online.
Yes. Yeah, I would encourage you to check that out. The spring show was running for about a week, and that's when we had to close down the operation. So it was absolutely beautiful, and it was, really hard for us to take that all apart when it still looked great. But before we did so, we took lots of pictures, we took video, and so that and the entire garden, we're trying to keep people connected with through social media. So, we're on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, and we have our website. And so we're really trying to stay connected, and we're having a really positive comments from the public when they do see that stuff and say, keep it coming. We need it now more than ever.
How's that new building project?
Great. So the Learning Center was completed. I mean, there's still a couple items to which there always is, right, to finish up. The landscape is being finished up right now. Irrigation is being completed, and some odds and ends and fine grading. So we're going to be going forward with planting that landscape, which I'm really excited about. I worked up which I think is a nice design for it. We're putting a real emphasis on native plants along with, some of the common favorites that we would use. But so we'll be plugging away at planting that. And, of course, it'll go a little slower than we had anticipated since we won't have, all the help with our volunteers. But it's going forward, and we're excited about that. And though we canceled our spring annual display because we knew people would not be able to see that. So those are the plants that enjoy the cooler conditions. And, you know, by the time we open again, you know, those most likely would be done, and the summer annuals will go in. So we're going forward with our summer annual plantings. They're, you know, being grown in the greenhouse right now, and those will start being planted around, you know, first week of June, somewhere in there. And hopefully we'll have visitors coming back, you know, not long after, just to enjoy that.
Jeff Epping, our guest from Obrick Botanical Gardens. We'll take some calls. Chris in Black Creek has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Yes. Hey, guys. Great day. Thanks for the show. I, as owner and operator of crystalsforkids.org, that's crystals with an S, crystalsforkids.org, I have a hibiscus that, you know, I put in the basement, and then it was not doing so well. So I brought it up and gave it lots of love, and the foliage is coming back quite nicely. And what I'd like to know is if it starts to pop flower buds, I'm wondering if I can cut those off to relieve the plant from putting energy to the flower pods and to get more foliage. And then once it has more foliage, will it pop more flower buds so that I get more flowers at one time instead of just a couple here and there?
And yeah, I would think question. You bet. So I think that would be a good approach. You know, a lot of times when we store plants for the winter, we're just trying to keep them kind of limping along. We don't want to encourage a lot of new growth since the light levels are low and all. But now is the time when we're going to start pushing those plants back into some good growth. So giving it a shot of some type of fertilizer is not a bad idea. As soon as the temperatures, get a little warmer, we can start moving them outside and doing what we call hardening them off. And that's basically taking them from this indoor condition to the real world outdoors. And we start them off in full shade. You know, this is like a 2-week period that you're doing this for. So full shade for maybe 3-4 days, and then a little more sun, a little more sun, a little more sun. And that allows the foliage to adapt to those sunnier conditions, which if you just put them directly from a house out into that atmosphere, they burn. And you often see this, happen if people are a little too quick. So you have to gradually do that, and then you increase the watering and all those things. So removing blossoms, sure, I think that would probably be a good way to encourage more vegetative growth. And then when the plant starts to build up, food or carbohydrates again, it'll probably push flowers again. I think that's a pretty good approach.
All right. Great. Thanks very much.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Appreciate your call. Let's take a call from Bill in Green Bay. Hi, Bill.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. We're redoing some raised beds, and first time we used untreated pine, and we'd like to use something that would last longer. So the question is, would using treated wood, is there any danger of the treatment on the wood leaching into the soil? We want to grow organically.
Yeah, I would say yes. We try to avoid any treated woods in use at the botanical gardens. In fact, we have a wood planked bridge that leads from the main garden to the Thai garden. And when that went in several years back, we opted for black locust because it's a naturally rot resistant wood, and white oak would be another good one. Of course, any type of cedar has that natural resistance. So we avoid any of the chemically treated wood. And I think anytime you're growing food crops, especially around, those type of products, I would caution, you. In fact, yeah. We just don't do that. And I don't think anybody feels good about using them that way, whether you're growing organically or not. I don't know. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think your recommendations on the types of wood that could be used are good ones. Bill, does that help?
That helps. So could you run through the recommendations again? One of them was white oak. What were the other ones?
Yeah, I would say white oak and cedar are probably the two that you'll find. We used black locust, but to be honest, that was pretty difficult to get our hands on, and it's not a commonly used wood, but one that we actually had harvested locally west of Madison and had a mill process it for us. So it was kind of cool to use something local. But with that said, I think probably white oak and use if you can, afford it in your budget, use a thicker wood. So like a 2x material, like a 2x6, 2x4, 2x8, whatever it is, because that will last much longer than just using a 1x4, 1x6, just for the amount of wood that's there will last a little longer.
Yeah. The cedar might last longer than the white oak.
Yeah.
And it's more expensive.
It is. And most of it's harvested, in the western part of the United States and shipped in. And so, it's certainly a viable option and one that's, I don't think you'll have any problem finding the wood if you do a little research.
Yeah. Bill, I hope that helps. Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's go to Craig and Butternut. Hi, Craig.
Hi, good morning. I live in Butternut, Wisconsin. It's really quite far north. And I've been for years trying to find the dark, dark purple lilac bushes. And everywhere I go, I get those light purple ones. And I realize there's probably some sort of variety that isn't popular or something, but I would really like to be able to get those in my yard.
Yeah, lilacs, were a plant that was fairly available, years back, 20, even 20 years ago, but it seems in recent years, fewer and fewer nurseries are growing them or selling them, and I think it's just all due to demand. They're going to grow what people want to buy. With that said, you can still get some of those varieties, but probably your best bet, if you can't find them locally, is to go online and see if there's some nurseries out there that are selling the darker purple variety or cultivars varieties. And, lilacs grow relatively quickly, so even getting a smaller half-gallon or gallon-sized container, which is typically what you can get through the mail, grows fast. You'll see flowers on that plant within 3 years, probably, if you, care for it well. But, yeah, I agree. There's so many cultivars available. If anybody has been to the University of Wisconsin Arboretum at the Long and Ecker Gardens during lilac season, it's just incredible.
It is.
The variations there are in the lilacs, and they're all beautiful. Some are pure white to lavender to, like you say, almost blue to purple to Picotee types where there's a little white edge around each of the florets that might be a purple color. So yeah, it's amazing the variety, but finding some of those very older cultivars is somewhat difficult. One mail order nursery that you might check out is one called Song Sparrow, and they're in the Jamesville, Wisconsin area, and they've always had a pretty decent selection, but I'm sure there's others out there.
There you go, Craig. Song Sparrow, the name of that place. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Tim Peterson, our on-air producer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your garden for spring with Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Larry Mueller here for Garden Talk. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Just a second ago, we were talking about different plants, and it reminded me about... pruning, Jeff, and is there still time to prune shrubs and trees?
Absolutely. We like to prune all of our plants, the woody plants, in the dormant season, which we're just starting to get to the end of. Some plants are actually just starting to peak leaves out here in Madison, but further north, I'm sure things are pretty tight. But it's still a good time because when we prune, any wounds that we create in pruning heal over only during active growth. So the closer you can get to that active growth period, the sooner those plants will heal up and move on, push new growth for you. Old brick is a big place, so we start pruning as soon as the leaves fall, and prune throughout the winter so that we can get through the whole collection. But we're still picking away at pruning a little bit here and there. And the only thing you don't want to prune are definitely oaks and elms, because we don't want to spread diseases like oak wilt or Dutch elm disease. So I think April 1st is the recommended date for stopping and pruning those. But otherwise, you're in good, this is a great time. And go for it.
You know, I haven't cleaned out my flower beds yet because I've been, hoping that I will save a few of those beneficial insects that might still be in the garden, but a lot of our folks have already, in my neighborhood at least, have really cleaned out the beds, and probably for good reason. We have some warm days and, we're all at home. But I'm wondering about planting. When is it safe to start planting in your mind?
I think perennials and such anytime now. Now, annuals, of course, those are going to be soft and vulnerable to frost, but our perennials are tougher. If you have existing perennials in your garden, which you want to divide, and this is the perfect time of the year to do that. Actually, it's been a pretty mild winter, and it has ground has been thawed for quite some time. So I've been dividing a lot of plants in my own garden. I'm on the hook for Olbrich's garden tour this year, so I am especially diligent about getting ready this year. So I've been doing a lot of work already, and we can even divide some bulbs, snowdrops, if you're lucky enough to have those in your garden. After they are done blooming, you can actually dig them, divide them, and create new clumps of them. They call it dividing in the green, the British gardeners say. And so that's possible. So definitely any trees, shrubs, vines, anything can be planted now if you can get your hands on them, which is a little more difficult this year. But a lot of nurseries and such are offering, online ordering and curbside pickup and all those things. So, we're going ahead with planting everything, we can. We want to support all of the nursery industry in any way we can, and garden centers and all those places. So, and gardening is just, it's good for the soul, and we all need
it
that
right now. We do indeed. Yeah. Kevin emailed us. He started about 150 maples and red oaks 2 years ago, and they don't seem to be doing much. His soil is sandy loam, more sandy than loamy a little bit. Can he side dress with something? What other ideas do you have, Jeff?
Well, certainly when you plant very young trees like that, they often spend the first year or two putting down a root system. And then they tend to take off in years, three and four. So maybe this is the year that they'll really, they'll really get moving for them. But certainly, on a soil that might be a little lacking of nutrients, manure would be great, if you want to do a little bit more organic side of things. And, they slowly decompose and add nutrients as the plants can take them up and use them to grow. I always caution about over-fertilizing any plants. Usually there's a fair amount of nutrients there. Things might grow slower, but that's kind of what they want to do in that situation. Early on in my, when I first came to Old Brick, and I've been there for quite some time now, but, you know, when we first started, we really wanted to, I really wanted to get the gardens developed quickly, and I started fertilizing a lot of our younger trees, and that was a mistake, because they put on such lush growth that it wasn't strong growth. It wasn't until we saw a lot of breakage of limbs and the plants were not, you know, hard, and they were more vulnerable to disease and insects because, you know, we were just pushing them too hard with lots of nitrogen. So I learned my lesson the hard way. And so we more than anything, Larry, I think the best thing you can do is give them a little extra water during the growing season when we get into those, you know, dry spells. Water goes a long way in getting them through those droughty periods and keeping them healthy, and then, you know, and then they'll grow a little more on a more even keel, and, you know, it'll be better. You'll be better off for that.
For sure. And I certainly agree with you on the fact that the trees, you know, need to get that root system going. In my own experience over the years, 2 years isn't really an abnormal amount of time before the, you know, the trees start going. So in Kevin's case, he might be watching it this year, and he might see some growth this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that.
Doris in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Doris.
Hi. I have a question about a community garden. Last year there was an article in the journal or something about somebody running a free community garden for vets. And I had seen the article towards the end of summer, and I found out who was running that, and I was asking if I could get involved with it because I'm a widow of a vet. But since then, I found out that the person that was running that garden has passed away. Now, I've driven past that garden. There was a garden. There's nobody there. There's nothing there. You know, like a fence around a plot. How do I go about finding out whether somebody's running that garden? Do I just go start planting?
You might want to, I might throw in 2 cents worth here. You might call your extension office and ask to speak with the horticulture person there, because I'm betting that they might well have been involved in some aspect of it, Doris, and that might be a first place to go for information. I don't know, Jeff, what do you think?
No, I think, you know, most of the community gardens obviously are organized by someone because, you know, they have to be, otherwise it would be chaos. Personally, I have a garden plot at Eagle Heights Community Gardens here in Madison, and I know they have plots available. I'm not sure. I'm sorry, Doris, I didn't hear where you were from, but again, I think you just need to find, I think, whoever's organizing these. Oftentimes they're online if you're able to research it that way. But I would think, like Larry said, that the local Dane County Extension agent could point you in the right direction for wherever it is you're looking.
Yeah, or actually Milwaukee. Doris is in Milwaukee.
Gotcha.
So the Milwaukee. Okay. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure you're going to get some help there, Doris. Does that help?
Thank you.
Yes. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tony in Chilton has something for us. Hi, Tony.
Yeah, hey. Good morning. I have a question for you first, and I have a question for Jeff second. And the first question is, when are you going to allow me to take you out on Lake Michigan to fish for salmon, Larry?
Wow. That sounds like a pretty nice offer there, Larry. If you don't go, I think I'll step in for you.
Okay. Good. Well, we'll arrange that another time. For Jeff, I'm probably a couple shows behind, but I'm doing straw bale gardening, and put 10-10-10 fertilizer on it, and I'm letting it sit up and do what I have to do. But I want to know, if I don't want to plant tomatoes in there, but beets, will beets do okay?
Beets would do okay, but there's a I think you need to have a little soil on top to get the seeds started. Mm-hmm. But once they get started, it should be fine. But you will need, you might go online just to straw bale gardening. There are some pretty good videos. And if you just type in straw bale gardening, you're going to get a lot of information on it. But you will need to make a sort of a little V shape in the top of the bale and then put some soil in there before the seeds need to have some soil just to get going. But once they get going, assuming the bales are, producing and working well, you're going to get beets.
That sounds good.
All right. thank you. But really, do go online and take a look, because there's lots of really good information on that, Tony. Thank you. Jeff, have you ever done straw bale gardening?
I did. You know, I heard, is it Joel Karstens, who was lectured at the Garden Expo. I heard him lecture, and I gave it a shot that following season, and I had pretty good luck with it. My problem here at home now is that I have a beautiful large Kentucky coffee tree in the park behind me, which is now completely shading my veggie garden that I had. And so that's why I now have a plot up at Eagle Heights, and I just enjoy the tree. So that's all good.
Tony, thanks again. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Another email from a listener asking about how they can convert their weedy gravel paths in their vegetable and flower garden to something like what you have at Obrick, the secondary paths that are made of some sort of powdery white material.
Okay, I think we have a lot of brick paths at Obrick, but due to budgets, we also, and actually I think a gravel path is kind of is has its own beauty, and so we use on those paths a quartzite, it is actually screening, or some people call it choker. And basically, it's like gravel that is maximum size is about a quarter inch or 3/8 of an inch. And then all the fines are in it. So meaning when they crush the gravel and they screen it, everything bigger than that quarter to 3/8 inch is screened out. And then all these other grades are, is what you get. And when you have that type of gravel, it packs nicely. Okay. And that's what we would use under brick walkways and things like that as well. If you use a washed gravel, like we use in our gravel gardens, which then all the gravel pieces are about the same size, they maintain the airspace in between. And that's great for our gravel gardens. But the gravel moves around a lot, like say pea gravel. So that doesn't always make such a good walking surface. It moves around on your feet and such. So, typically in Wisconsin, depends on where you're at in the state, but farther north, like Wausau area, I believe it's usually like crushed granite choker. So it has sort of an orangey color to it, which is nice. Down here in many parts of the southern central part of the state is limestone choker or screenings. And this quartzite is basically, if you've ever seen the large stone along railroad tracks, it has sort of a silvery gray color, but they're really big. It's the same stone, but it's the crushed stone. So that's what we use. And it works out nice. And because it packs so tightly, it doesn't allow many weeds to get established. Sometimes they do after a rainy period on the edges, and we just kind of scrape them off with a hoe, and you're good to go.
All right. Carol in Madison pulled her geraniums in the fall, put them in the basement to dry, and would like to replant them this year. What should she do next?
Well, if I'm not, sounds like maybe they're not in pots. I remember my grandfather pulling them out, throwing them in a paper grocery bag and just throwing them in the garage. And then in the spring, he'd pull them out, pot them up, cut them back kind of hard, you know, so there's a nice stem there, but kind of compact. And then after you pot them, water them, give them a real dilute solution of fertilizer, and give them some light. Right now, you would probably just put them in a south-facing window, unless you're lucky enough to have a greenhouse or something like that, or you could do it under lights if you have a light table in your home. And then they'll just start going, and probably about the time they're, you know, coming along and filling out nicely is about when you'll be able to, you know, harden them off, like we talked about earlier, to the conditions outside. So probably by, you know, Mother's Day or a week, a couple weeks after is when they will be able to, you know, be planted then out in your garden.
Got a nice email from Gary. He called our email to say thank you, Jeff, for the beautiful spring show of flowers planted around the Olbrich sign. It's uplifting. He said, especially because the gardens need to be closed right now.
Oh,
and it is pretty.
That's really nice to hear. Yeah. Yeah. The guys, you know, we miss having people in the garden and appreciating everything that's in there, too. And so the horticulture team all got together and used a lot of the plants that were left over from the show, the spring indoor show. Harden them off, and we have a great display out there right by the sign. So neighbors walking by with their dogs and all, and people driving by can appreciate it. So yeah, it's turned out really, really nicely.
Yeah, it did indeed. Let's take a call, Teresa in Mineral Point. It's your turn. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
It's Good Friday, and I've got some seed potatoes, and I've never planted them before, but my dad always said this is the day to plant potatoes, and I don't know where to go. I've got my seed potatoes, and I got my garden.
Well, Larry, as you know, I'm a fledgling veggie gardener, so seed potatoes, we put those in the ground right now, I assume?
Let's see. What's the temperature of the ground? Is it 50 degrees yet? Probably...
Getting there, I would think. Huh? I don't know. It's getting cold the next few nights. I know that. Going in the early next week, but that's a good question. that's a crop I have never grown before, I'll be honest.
You know what I did the last couple of years? I had leftover straw from my straw bales, and I just piled them all in a heap, and I took the seed potatoes, cut them, and lifted up the material and just threw them in there, and I got a nice little crop of potatoes.
I'll be darned. just that easy.
And then some other, I was talking about that on the show, and somebody else called and said they made, they took some wire and sort of made a circle out of the wire, kind of rolled it so that they had a little what looked like a chimney, kind of, filled it with leaves. But as they were filling, they put in the potatoes,
mm-hmm.
and then put a little more material on top, put in some more potatoes, and then the vines grew out the sides. Mm-hmm. And then when they were ready to harvest, they just unhooked the wire, and everything fell out, and there it all was.
Didn't even have to dig. That's pretty clever. I might have to try that one.
No digging involved.
So, Teresa,
you know, I guess you could try to, if you're putting them in the ground, I guess you could give it a try with some of it, and some you might want to wait a week or two.
Okay, thanks much. Have a good Easter.
You as well. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Oh, a lot of fun. Shannon in Greenwright County. Thanks for calling.
You bet. You don't have to dig. You always plant them on Good Friday, number one, because of the way the moon or whatever is working. But you can plant them on top of the ground, cover them up with hay, say 6 inches or so, and the plants come up through the hay. Put some more hay around them. And in June when you want to have, or July you want to have new potatoes, you reach underneath and there they are.
Oh, awesome. I learned something.
That's not my invention. Root stout. How to have a green thumb without an aching back.
One of the great videos that you can find online is go to Ruth Stout's garden. You type that in and you get a video of her planting, because I was thinking of her when I planted those potatoes the last couple of years. And she would just throw things in the pile that she had of leaves and whatever else that she had there, and things would just grow and there was no weeding or anything else to worry about. She used to, she said, although we don't see her doing this on the video, fortunately, she said she always liked to garden in the nude. She's a great old gal. Look up Ruth Stout's garden video and you'll see her and she'll talk about it. So, Shannon, thanks for that call and reminding me about Ruth Stout. Oh boy. Barb in Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi. How are you?
Great. What can we do for you?
Well, okay. I just moved from the Madison area to the Dubuque, Iowa area. And probably the zone isn't all that much different. But I have a situation where I have a backyard with a fence that I'm not really enjoying. And I only have 20 feet from the foundation, and there is a patio deck in the back that there's about 3 to 4 feet of green space in between the patio deck and the fence. And I've been looking for some trees that would be more tall and kind of columnar. I want to make sure that it's not a tree that is going to, you know, disturb the foundation or the patio deck, but I'm kind of struggling. I would love to plant like birch trees, because you could get, you know, year-round interest, or some sort of an evergreen, and wondered if you had any other ideas or websites that I could look at trees for this.
It sounds like it's a fairly small space. Is that correct? I mean, you would probably be better off with a smaller scale tree, like a service berry possibly, or something on that order, rather than, say, something like an oak or a white pine or that tree.
Right. And
yeah.
And the thing is I want them to grow tall. I'm not enjoying the fence, so I want to sort of cover it up with green stuff. So I did think about a birch tree, like if I could get single birch trees that would grow just, you know, straight as an arrow. I don't know if that's possible, and I don't want it impinging on the house. But then I also thought of evergreens, and I just wondered if you had any other thoughts, something that's going to grow tall and, you know, high and not bother the foundation.
When you're sitting on your deck looking out, direction are you facing? Is it?
Let me think about that.
Just wondering if you have a lot of sun there. Is it a south or east, west, east? Oh, that's a really a good exposure, actually, because you get a lot of the cool morning sun. And so birch would probably be a good choice. There's a birch called White Spire, which was actually developed here at the University of Wisconsin by Ed Hafelkus, and that is a smaller scaled upright birch, which doesn't get large from side to side. I actually have a grove of them planted at the back of my own garden
Another possibility would be Allegheny serviceberry, Amelanchier laevis, L-A-E-V-I-S. And that, look up Allegheny serviceberry.
Okay.
And that's important because there's a lot of different types of serviceberries, and some of them get very wide, like apple serviceberry does. But Allegheny stays more upright, and typically you can they usually come multi-stemmed. It's a beautiful native tree, you know, which is great for all of our native creatures that will support, you know, birds and all those things as well. Another native upright, it's a selection of a native tree, is hornbeam or carpinus, fire spire. And it's a narrow upright selection that was introduced by Johnson's Nursery in Menominee Falls in the Milwaukee area. And that's a tree actually that we're planting in a big way in our new learning center landscape.
Cool.
Yeah, it'll be really, really cool. There's going to be an alley of them. So again, you know, I kind of lean towards trying to use more native plants these days because of all the great things they do for the, you know, for all the other creatures that we're trying to help out. And so the Allegheny serviceberry and the hornbeam, the fire spire, will be the natives. The white spire, I guess it's native to the East Coast, they say. But anyway, three of those would work. I can't think of an evergreen that would really work well there. Yeah.
Barb, there you go.
Do you have a website that you could recommend for me to look at trees?
Usually if you just Google image, you know, type in whatever it is you're looking for and hit Google images, you can come up with all sorts of, you know, photographs to see what it is you're after. I don't have a single recommendation. University of Wisconsin-Madison, the horticulture department has a list of recommended landscape shrubs, plants that would probably fit your, you know, climate as well, because you're not that different than we are.
There you go, Barb. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. We'll go right to the phones again. And Phil in Hebron, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to ask Mr. Epping if he's got a suggestion of how I can control reed canary grass. And I'm not afraid to go nuclear if that's the necessity.
How big an area do you have, Phil?
What I need to control rather desperately is probably 50 by 20.
Okay. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, the more environmental way to do it would probably be to try to cover 50 by 20. That's not huge. But to cover that with something, either be it, you know, cardboard with 6 inches of wood chips after you mow it tight to the ground, or black plastic, you know, if we go with something a little, you know, more in, you know, it's made out of plastic, so we try to avoid that if we can. But in this situation, I don't know, it's going to be tough. We, you know, that's a plant that, you know, you can control with chemical, by chemical means, if you use Roundup or glyphosate, you know, if it comes to that. That's a tough one. I am not sure if it responds to any amount of burning or anything like that. I'll be honest with you. That's often something that plant restorationists who, you know, establish and maintain woodlands and prairies and that sort of thing deal with, and not one that we often do, fortunately. So that's kind of what I got. I don't know if you think of something else, Larry.
There are some chemicals, as you suggest. Otherwise, the covering that area, Then you'd have to cover it probably for the season, I would think.
Yeah, I would too. I'm wondering if the Wisconsin DNR might have something on their website. I know they often have recommendations for dealing with invasive species. If not, you know, solicited, maybe you could, you know, email them or call and see what they might recommend.
Yeah. So, Phil, if you go to Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, you could look up invasive species and you may get some help there as well. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Maria in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Larry. A wonderful show as usual. Thank you. I had a question. We have two old walnut trees in our backyard. We've lived in our house for over 35 years. But one of the walnut trees, they always bloom very well, but with leaves and, of course, the walnuts. But it looks like on the bark, it's about a 3 feet area that it's red. It's looked like if you took the spice cinnamon and threw it onto the tree, the bark, that's what it looks like. And we've looked at it, and I can see where there's little holes like woodpeckers there. But, I was just wondering if you'd have any ideas.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to diagnose that without seeing it in person, but typically when you see woodpeckers pecking away on something like that, it's because they're finding insects. And if they're finding insects in there, it might be because the tree has some rotting wood in it and they're feeding on that. So I think probably the best thing would to get a local arborist, a certified arborist out to really take a close look at that. Another possibility is maybe take some photographs of that and send it to the disease diagnostic lab, plant pathology with the university, something on that order. But I'm probably the best thing to do would be to call a professional in to really take a close look at it. And hopefully they can, remedy the situation for that. So that tree has a nice long life ahead of it yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of those cases. You've got something that's a really kind of a valuable tree there. Probably best to get a professional out. From the arborist, I'm blanked suddenly on the Arborist Association. You can look online and find professional arborists who would be able to give you help in the Lake Geneva area for sure, Maria. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Marie in Strum, your turn. Hi, Marie.
Yes, I was wondering, we have a wooded lot, and we have a lot of oak wilt, which we didn't realize was in there. And some of those trees are going to have to come down. And I was just wondering what kind of trees. We have a few cherries and a few maples. And just wondering what other kinds of trees or what kinds of trees with color in the fall, and then how far apart to plant them.
I have a question for you. Do you have somebody that's trying to control the oak wilt? Because, if you do have a pocket of it, you can keep it from spreading through various means. Obviously need somebody to do that work for you. But oftentimes oaks graft through their root systems. And if we want to prevent the spread, you need to break those root grafts with a kind of with a trencher, or they even have like a chemical barrier that they can create. So that might not be a bad idea to look into to alleviate the further spread. As far as the tree recommendations, again, probably want to go back with native species in your, in your region or in nearby woodlots and such. So, again, probably consulting with a company that can kind of assess what you have and then supplement, tree species that would be well adapted for those conditions would be the way to go.
Yeah, this might be another case where you might want to get a professional arborist in there to take a look at those trees, because Jeff is exactly right when it comes to that disease spread through the root system. And this might be time for somebody that, can be there and looking at things to give you some sound advice. I'm sorry for the oak wilt, for sure, Marie. Thank you very much for calling, and do get a hold of a professional arborist. Well, Carol called us from Gutenberg, Iowa, to pass along the previous caller who wanted to find a dark-colored lilac to reach out to Murray's Country Garden and Outdoor Store in Gutenberg, Wisconsin, and ask for Beth Murray. So Murray's Country Garden and Outdoor Store in Gutenberg, and ask for Beth Murray, because Beth Murray's going to help you out there. Oh, man. Our guest today, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, back with us once again, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. So, what gardening questions do you have? Join in, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Jeff, we have an email from Sandy, who's wondering about a refresher, how to prepare the garden for planting.
Well, okay. Well, that's a good question. Basically, I mean, it's a matter of scale, of course, as well. Like, we're prepping the soil right now for our big learning center planting. So in that instance, we're working in, we kind of use a lot of leaf mulch at the garden, and we will leaf mulch those beds after we plant to add a little bit of organic matter and cool the soil, keep the weeds down, that sort of thing. But as far as, you know, adding all sorts of organic matter to planting, be it small or big, that's something that they've kind of gone away with a recommendation. Like, they used to put peat moss and work that all in and all that sort of thing. But now, you know, a lot of research has shown that plants actually do better if you just kind of put them in the soil that they're going to grow in for the long haul, rather than give them this little utopian planting hole which they never want to leave. You know, it's you want to encourage the roots to get out into all the natural surrounding soil. So work the soil up a little bit. Like, if I even plant like a 4-inch size container, you know, a perennial or such, I work up the soil, the existing soil, about a foot deep and wide around that to loosen that natural soil that it's going to grow into up a little bit. You don't have to rototill it or anything. Just kind of work it up with your shovel, break it up, plant into that. And when we plant, if, you know, lots of our plants are in a soilless mix these days, which is a real lightweight mix, the root systems get very tight in those pots. Don't be afraid to tear those roots apart and get them all loosened up. And sometimes we even cut them if they're really, really dense. We actually butterfly the bottom, or you take, you know, a sharp utensil knife, maybe even, you know, the sharp spade or something, and cut about halfway up the root ball in one direction and then in the other direction. So you quarter it, basically. And then when you plant it, kind of stuff some soil in between those quarters to keep them from folding back up again. And that encourages the roots to, again, branch and grow rather than stay in that little root ball. And that's important. So after you plant, give it a good
good drink of water, lightly mulch it like I was talking about. And you don't, if a little's good, a lot is not always better with mulch. You want enough to cover the soil, but you don't want so much that you're going to pile it up on the crown of the plant, and then you'll might have issues with rotting, trapping too much moisture in there, that sort of thing.
There you go. Carlin in Genesee emailed wondering whether sumac is indigenous and whether they can plant some of the berry seeds in the backyard. Would they require any special treatment to get started?
Well, sumac, the more sure way to do it is to buy plants. They don't have to be big. Sumac's a relatively fast growing plant. It is a native plant for sure. It's one of my very favorite plants. Know also that there's male and female plants, so it's what they call dioecious. So the ones we notice the most are the female with the nice big upright burgundy colored fruit, which is beautiful through the winter months. But there's also the male plants that don't have those. So typically when you buy them from a nursery, you're buying usually the female. They're not always cultivars or, like a cultivated variety, but just they start them from root pieces. So they know that they're going to get that genotype or that female plant. You can do it from seed. I have not done so outdoors. Trees or shrubs that grow outdoors go through a dormancy, the seeds do. And so planting them now they may not germinate until they go through a cold treatment, but they may too, because they might have had that happen naturally. The thing about sumac, I love the plant, but you're going to either want to plant it where you have ample space so it can just move, because that's what they do. They sucker as they get bigger and older. And so if you put them in a very small space, or you put them in a perennial garden or something where you want it to stay right where you planted it, good luck with that. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man.
With that said, it's a great plant, and I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially if you have a rural garden where you have some acreage, why not put in plants that take up this bunch of space and provide great habitat and food for our native creatures. So good for you.
There we go. Christina in Glenwood has something. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two questions. One is, my amaryllis have just stopped blooming, and so I'd like to know, what do I need to do to save those bulbs? And the second question is, every year I bring in my geraniums. They flower throughout the winter. They grow inside. And I'm wondering how to propagate them. They're very healthy. They look great. So those are my two questions.
Okay, Christina. Thanks for calling. Jeff?
Yeah, so after the amaryllis bloom, you let them dry down, basically. So you withhold water. The bulbs, gained energy while they were, still in growth. You let them dry down and store them for a short period of time until you bring them back into growth again. I know some people who actually plant them outdoors afterwards, through the season to get the bulbs to be bigger or produce more bulbs, and then they can dry them down again and then pot them up near the holiday season. Typically, a guy like me, I just buy a new one. I compost the one that I have. I buy another one,
yeah.
Because those guys really know what they're doing. But it's cool when people do get them to come back year after year after year, right? That's fun. That's a great, great way to do it. And then as far as the geraniums, take tip cuttings from those. Basically, it's hard to say, not seeing your plant, but a cutting that's probably 3 inches long or so. Remove them from each of the tips of the plant. Put them in a lightweight mix that sometimes you add like some perlite or vermiculite or something, a real lightweight mix. Keep them on a little bit, you want them moist, but not soaking wet. And then you could put those in, say, a east-facing window if you have that, or under grow lights. And they, you know, and they'll root in. You might, if they seem to be wilting in a big way, you can create sort of like a little plastic tent. You just use even like a clear plastic bag that you might have to go over an individual pot, and that helps hold the humidity in there so that they that they're able to, you know, not dry up too bad before they actually root in. Geraniums, by right, are fairly easy to root. So yeah. I think you'll have pretty good luck with that.
Thank you, Christina. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Dan and we'll see next. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hello. I was wondering, we've had this emerald ash borer, and it's killed a lot of ash trees. Is there a possibility that we'll be able to grow those again, or can you start them from a small tree and treat them so that we don't get that in them?
Well, to be honest with you, at this point, no. There's no resistant varieties out there that I know of, and you know, they're sadly, you know, that is one of our toughest trees and was throughout all of the Midwest. And you just see big blocks of them go in woodlands and river bottoms, as well as all of our street trees. That's, you know, that's sad that it has happened. I would plant something else, you know, another native tree. I mean, oaks are a fantastic tree that are so well adapted to our conditions. People often think they're so slow growing, but they're really not. And they're plants that'll be around a long time, and they're plants that will support, you know, a great network of insects. And maybe it's a good time to mention, I don't know, Larry, have you had Doug Tallamy on your program in the past?
Not for a long time.
Okay. Well, he just came out with a new book called Nature's Best Hope, and I have read it twice. And I think any gardener or even non-gardener should buy that book and read it. And it'll sort of change your whole idea about how we garden. And if we can, you know, garden better, we will really do great things to save monarchs, to save all the songbirds that we love so dearly. And a lot of it starts with plants, right? We got to plant things that all those insects eat, because all the other creatures that we, you know, see flying around us and the birds that come to our feeder, they need those insects to feed their young and to flourish. And coming back to the oak then, they've done a lot of studies of what particular native plants, what they support. And they did a study on just caterpillars, how many caterpillar species a particular plant will support. And a tree like a ginkgo, which is not native, but always been one of my favorite trees, they're beautiful, but they offer nothing, almost nothing. I think they support one caterpillar species, whereas an oak will support about 435 different species.
Wow.
And it's amazing. And so he has a little, you know, they've done this research with grad students. God bless them, you know, doing all this busy work. But they watched a nest of chickadees from the time they hatched from the egg to the time they fledged. And a clutch of four chickadees, the parents had to feed them between, I think it was somewhere between 6,000 and 9,000 caterpillars.
Wow.
Four chickadees. Is that amazing? And where do they find these caterpillars? They find them on the native plants that are all around us. And so if we can, you know, provide food for them, for the insects, then it provides it for the birds. And that's just one nest, right? And how many birds are around us. So, if you read the book, it's not all gloom and doom about how we're destroying the planet. It's how we can do better to help. And it's not going to be saving all of our wild areas, which we definitely need to do. but it's us as gardeners needing to link those natural areas to other natural areas through our gardens and support all these great creatures every day in our gardens. And one of the things he you know, says is if we can convert 50% of our lawn space to plant space, to, you know, perennials and shrubs and trees and all these native plants, and they don't have to be strictly native, but at least, you know, more than 50%, we can mix them in with other things, that will change everything, and it will immensely help all of our birds that are endangered or threatened, you know, from the bottom up. And what he calls the food web is what we're supporting. So that's my recommendation. Everybody get that book. And each one of my horticulture staff members has one sitting on their desk right now, because I really wanted them to check it. After I read it, I was sold on what he's talking about. And this is a guy who knows what he's talking about. A lot of his recommendations are all based on solid research, not just, you know, his opinion. So please get out there and get that.
I'll have to get Doug back on the show to talk about that book for sure. Great comments there. Let's take another call. Nick in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Nick.
Hey guys, great show so far. Thanks for the information.
Sure.
Could you give that the last name of that author, the book you were just referring to, Doug? Somebody,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's Douglas Tallamy, Tallamy, and he has a couple books, but his most recent is Nature's Best Hope, and if you go online, you'll see it. And so many professionals, you know, my peers in the industry are super excited about gardening in this new way, because it's us who needs to, you know, lead the way, and botanic gardens and public gardens and parks and all of us as professionals need to pay closer attention to how we garden and what we plant, and hopefully everybody else joins in on this movement, because it's good stuff, and it really is important.
And Nick, you had a question.
I hope it's in regard to a native plant now, following what you were saying. But I've got a viney shrub. It must be at least 10, 12 years old, that was planted either too close to the house on the north side, so it did not get a lot of sunlight. I believe one year it blossomed. It was maybe reminiscent of something like a snowball viburnum, but... Mm-hmm. At its biggest, the vine is almost an inch in diameter. And I'm just wondering if I could dig that up and move that somewhere, or if, given where it is now, there's any remedies to kind of give it a little bit more of a refresh or rebirth.
Yeah, it sounds it's a shrub, or you were saying like a vine?
Is vine.
Vine. It's definitely a vine.
And does it cling right to the structure? I wonder if it's climbing hydrangea is what it sounds like to me. But
yeah,
sure.
I think you're right. That sounds okay. Like what it is.
Well, that's not one that transplants very easily, I'll be honest with you. And it's, you know, relatively slow to get established. But with that said, if you want to get it, you know, relocated because it's not in the proper spot, then, you know, go for it. Now would be the time to do it. Anytime you transplant something in your garden, be it shrub or tree, the best time to do it is while it's dormant. And right now it shouldn't have any leaves popping out of it. At least I hope not. That now is the time to do it. You'll have your best luck. Now, if this is a relatively old plant and you start getting into this and trying to move it, it just seems like impossible because it's the root system is so big and hard to get a good root ball. Then, you know, maybe you just abandon that and, you know, go out and buy, you know, something else that, you know, or the same plant, but smaller. But it's worth a try if you don't mind a little, you know, hard labor doing it. I know I've done it many times, so it's worth the effort if you can make it work.
Get the bottom of your foot a little sore sticking that spade into the ground.
Right.
Man, that happened many a time.
You
oh boy. Nick, thank you for calling. Good luck. Marilyn in South Range, your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, and thank you for my call, your call. I have two questions, but one is the most important, and that is last year the weeds in our garden, we have three raised beds about a foot up the, off the ground. They got overwhelmed with weeds, and we were gone. We weren't able to take care of it. One of the plots I'm going to cover with black plastic for the whole season, but how can I start the year and see how can I prevent the weeds from even taking hold? I know there's purslane in there for one of them, but it was just too much. So how do I start and prevent it?
Right. So, you know, there's two types. And I mean, you know, from a practical standpoint, is the annual weeds that will come back from seed every year. And those are relatively easy to keep under control versus something that's a perennial that, you know, if this space was completely infested with a perennial weed last year, you know, it's going to come right back to haunt you again. You know, a lot easier than an annual weed. So, first off, if you do have these perennial type weeds, you're going to have to try to get rid of them either through, you know, digging them up, and get them out of there. And then once you do that, then you come through with a mulch, and you could use like a leaf type mulch or a wood type mulch, and that will shade the soil and keep weed seeds from germinating and coming back. So I mentioned earlier that I just started vegetable gardening at Eagle Heights, and the plot that I got was completely from wall to wall infested with quackgrass. Oh. And Larry, you can appreciate how hard that is. And it's a vegetable garden, and whether I wanted to or not, I was going to control it to organically. And the whole garden is all organic, so you can't use chemicals. And so I literally went through every square inch of that space with a spade, with a gardening spade, which is a more of a wide-tined, five-tined blade. Gardening fork. Yeah. And I dug down about 12 inches and every square inch and pulled out the rhizomes, which are the underground root system. And believe it or not, I got rid of 99% of it by doing that. And I had a little comeback during the season, which I expected, and I just dug it out. And this year when I went out to my plot, I didn't have a single blade of grass come up. So it's hard work.
It works.
But it works. And
oh, man. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, that is a good point, a good positive place to end, Jeff. Thank you so much for being with us today. You'll come back and be with us again, I assume?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Thank you for having me, Larry.
Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. He will be back with us again. Next week on Garden Talk, Doug Soldat will be back to talk about lawn. So I hope you can join us at 11 on Friday or 6 a.m. on Saturday or online at any time. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.